sale. There's over 350 screenings of 200.
Good morning and welcome to The Vulture's Nest on 2SER 107.3. I'm your host, Eden Casita, and I am in the nest alone this week. Everyone seems to be taking a sabbatical and a break, so I'll be here from 10:30 till 11, going through the top news stories of the week, kind of just going over some of the events that have affected Australia and the world, as well as looking at it from a more critical angle. And talking about it more than just what we see in the newsrooms and on broadcast commercial television. So we'll start today with a story about somebody who I know is divisive in the Vulture's Nest, which is Donald Trump, President Donald Trump of the United States. And this week he has fired James Comey, who is the former FBI director. So for those uninitiated, I don't know how you may be uninitiated, but if you have been, James Comey started an investigation against Hillary Clinton prior to the presidential election last year. And there were a lot of criticisms, a lot of questions about Hillary Clinton's past, her involvement in the Benghazi attack when she was Secretary of State, as well as issues regarding the Clinton Foundation and where that money was going in relation to Haiti, as well as just a bunch of other, I guess you could say, conspiracies about Hillary Clinton's involvement in politics and the way that she has handled herself and her constituents. So James Comey went after Hillary Clinton prior to the election, and a number of commentators and news speakers and the general public were very much influenced by this, and in a way kind of saw the allegations as not as true, but everyone made their own judgment of it. And a lot of people began to think of Hillary Clinton as immediately guilty. And James Comey had started this investigation much, much prior to the election. However, it died down a bit, and then a few days, I think a mere week out before the November election in the US, he restarted it again. And a lot of people felt that that was him trying to just get at Hillary at the last minute, right before the polls, and kind of change the influence of the election, obviously. So, however, since then, obviously, a lot has changed. Donald Trump won the election to, I would say, the surprise of many people. And there were allegations against Donald Trump and his team colluding with Russia and Russian government officials and hackers, as it has been found out that there was an outside contribution, I guess you could say, an outside hack into the election results by the Russian government. So that's the whole background with that. And then what has happened since then was James Comey started, and the FBI started investigating the Donald Trump, his the groups around him, the Republicans, to see if they actually were colluding with the Russians for some, say, interaction within, for some input within the election, which is obviously illegal. So on Friday, US President Donald Trump fired FBI Director James Comey. And he also, interestingly enough, he warned him against leaking any negative information and put the news media on notice that he may cancel future White House briefings. So Trump fired Comey with this public letter, which to me does say a lot about how Trump is dealing with situations, especially as president. And so he leaked, you could say in quotes, leaked James Comey's firing letter. And obviously a lot of people, a lot of the liberal media have not taken this well, and a lot of people are really seeing this as the government kind of impeding on an ongoing investigation against itself. And a lot of connections have been brought up with Richard Nixon and the past and his past administration, and kind of the borderline between you know, this illegal activity and where the government can actually do what they can do legally. So However, in a new kind of, well, building upon that, on Friday, Trump suggested that there may be secret tapes of his conversations with Comey that could be used to counter the former FBI director if necessary. So Donald Trump tweeted, "James Comey better hope that there are no tapes of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press." So that's from Donald Trump. And he said that his allies and former employees often tape some of his own phone calls as well as meetings within his offices. So this is obviously a very trepidatious ground and a lot of problematic conflict. And there is the possibility that Trump is, you know, stepping in the way, obstructing justice, I guess you could say, kind of impeding this investigation, which is happening at the FBI. And so the White House spokespeople have not commented about anything regarding Trump recording conversations. And on Friday, Comey said to CNN that he was not concerned about any recordings happening at all. So Trump allegedly has been somewhat stressed on Friday and since then with the press and at the White House. And a lot of people are saying that, as I said, his decision to fire Comey is at the right time where he's being investigated between his associates and Russia. So allegedly, the New York Times reported that at a dinner shortly after his inauguration, Trump actually asked Comey to pledge loyalty to him and the FBI director refused to do so. So the story cited two people who heard this from Comey. However, the White House disagreed that that had ever happened. So this has just been kind of a crazy week in terms of that. If you have been listening to The Vulture's Nest for a while now, you know that we have gone through kind of peaks and troughs with the tale of US President Donald Trump and kind of his antics and the things that are happening. And to top it all off, Trump tweeted again. He said, "As a very active president with lots of things happening, it is not possible for my surrogates to stand at a podium with perfect accuracy. Perhaps the best thing to do would be to cancel all future press briefings and hand out written responses for the sake of accuracy." So Trump is obviously seeing that there are issues and that there is the possibility of more information kind of being misconstrued and being incorrectly delivered. So also the fact that you have to stand up to what you're saying in these press briefings, that you have to answer questions, is obviously quite daunting, you could say, for him. And so he, in this tweet, is saying that he would prefer to have written responses out, so there has to be no interaction, there's no kind of checking on of any facts or getting alternative opinions or anything like that. So it's been a crazy whirlwind with Trump's administration so far. I know that a lot of people are very tired of it, so we might move away from that. But something a little bit more, you know, kind of a little bit more on that side of things. And it is about our Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull, who is quoted as saying he is actively considering a request from NATO to send additional resources to Afghanistan. So, and this is off the back of the outgoing Defense Secretary Dennis Richardson saying that the war-ravaged nation of Afghanistan will continue to need Australia and Australian forces for many years to come. So this is also, I guess there's a whole history back with this, with the war on terror, goes back to Afghanistan and the issues Afghanistan has had decades ago. And it has all kind of just, things are becoming very conflated in the eyes of the general public. And a lot of people in the general public are seeing Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, as kind of conflating them into one issue when there's actually a lot of stakeholders and political movements and maneuvers, which is why this is happening. So the fact that Malcolm Turnbull has said that he is actively considering this request to send additional resources should, to me, I believe, spark some warning signs, simply because it's very reminiscent of what happened when Australia got heavily involved in Iraq. following 9/11. And it to me, does not seem like it is in Australia's best interest to continue to become involved in other countries' own democracies and their own politics and society as such. So I will just continue to read here. It says that Malcolm Turnbull said, "We are certainly open to increasing our work there, but we've obviously got to look at the commitment of the ADF in other parts of the region and indeed in other parts of the world. But it is important that we continue, we and our other allies, in the effort in Afghanistan, continue to work together to build up the capacity of Afghanistan's own security forces so that they can keep the country secure from the threat of terrorism, both ISIL and, of course, the Taliban." So it says here that 16 years after the conflict began in the wake of September 11 attacks in the US, Afghanistan's security remains volatile, with the Taliban regaining ground in the past year and Islamic State emerging as a new threat. So this, there is obviously, as I said, there are different stakeholders and different politics going within one internal, well, within one nation. And the idea of Australia getting involved within another conflict and getting involved within another nation's politics, to me, does not sound like it is the best thing to do thus far. So it says here that Australia should expect to stay for a very, very long time. However, this conflict has already gone on for 11 years. And so acknowledging that, yes, there is the new threat of ISIS and the Taliban are still an issue within this area, it seems to me that what Australia could offer is more than just soldiers to fight or to hold back. It is a different kind of resources that we need to be looking at offering, because we have been involved in this conflict now for 11 years and very little has changed and doesn't really seem like it's going to get much better. So it says here, Australia has provided almost $680 million since 2012 to help sustain the Afghan security forces. So also going back to Malcolm Turnbull and the Liberal government, who are saying that we have very little money available, that taxes and many things have to change within our society in order to cut back on this national debt. It's interesting that Australia has provided $680 million to help sustain one nation's security forces. And I think that we need to start reconsidering where our resources are going and how things can change and get better. So that is all for Afghanistan and Australia's involvement in it. We might go to a track right now to enjoy the Saturday morning. This is Little Arithmetics by Deuce. We'll be right back on The Vulture's Nest.
Into temptation.
Sydney Film Festival is now on sale. There's over 350 screenings of 288 films from 62 countries over 12 days in 10 venues. From the magnificent State Theatre in the city to the Ritz Cinema in Randwick, there's bound to be a film and a venue just right for you. It all happens from June 7 to 18. You can buy your flexi passes or single tickets right now at sff.org.au. Sydney Film Festival, proudly sponsoring 2SER 107.3.
Welcome back to The Vulture's Nest on 2SER 107.3. I'm your host, Eden Casita, and we are going over the top news stories of the week. We will look to something a bit funnier, a bit more lighthearted, although eventually did not end out that way, which is Qantas boss Alan Joyce, who pressed charges against a pie thrower who attacked him, in quotes, at a conference at a business forum in Perth. So what the general public saw was Alan Joyce, the Qantas chief executive, on stage delivering a speech, and a man who walked up to him and squashed his face with a lemon meringue pie. So to a lot of people, they took this before hearing any explanations. They took this as, you could say, payback for a lot of things that Alan Joyce has done, or even just kind of giving some recognition, I guess you could say, to the fact that people are angry with Alan Joyce and some of the decisions he's made and the comments he's made. However, what ended up happening was the man who did this, Tony Overhaul, who is a former farmer, eventually revealed that he had done this because Alan Joyce is a supporter of same-sex marriage. So this man has since been charged with assault charges. He is 67 years old, and the police are continuing their investigation into him. And Alan Joyce has obviously released a statement that says, "My intention is to send a message that this type of behaviour isn't acceptable and will have every intention of pressing charges. I have every intention to continue to be vocal on these social and community issues. I believe it is important for our stakeholders, our employees and our customers. It is called good corporate social responsibility." So there is a lot of, you could say, confusion. As I said, when this first happened, a lot of people were cheering the man. However, now a lot of people are saying that, are disagreeing with his reasoning why and his reasoning behind it. So this is all because Alan Joyce was one of 20 chief executives from Australia's largest companies who signed a joint letter in support of marriage equality. So this is interesting. We have discussed this in the past and about the responsibility of corporate companies in promoting and supporting social issues, especially we discussed around Mardi Gras. But I do think there is something here to be said about different opinions and how they are often played out. Because, as I said, when this first happened, a lot of people thought it was against some of the personal things he's said and he's done and his business interests. However, it was about something else entirely. So it was very interesting from that fact. And staying on the same kind of political round of things, this week was not a good week for Leader of the Opposition Bill Shorten and his ad, Labour Australian First ad, which Anthony Albanese, who's a Labour frontbencher, has criticised, as well as a number of people online, saying that it should never have been produced and that it does not send the right message. So fundamentally, Bill Shorten has asked the Labour Party to review the ad, which takes aim at the government's policy on temporary work visas and promises to employ Australians first. This, however, includes a picture of Mr. Shorten standing next to a group of mostly white Australians, sparking accusations of racism that picked up steam on social media. So a lot of people are not happy with the content and how this issue was handled, and a lot of people are saying that now things have to be, you know, they have to be dealt differently within the Labour Party. However, there are a lot of people saying that Labour is trying to take some voters from the Liberal Party who are more centrist and who are not very happy with the state of things under the Liberal government and as such have used this ad to appeal in that way. So there are kind of two arguments of the same story. It's just not very... It's a very difficult thing to do. For me, I do not think that Labour Party should have done their Employ Australian First with a group of mainly white Australians. However, the fact that the Greens have kind of made a comment about it, and then David Feeney, Labour frontbencher, has also returned fire, tweeting an image of their party, which is mainly white people as well. So it's once this kind of conversation starts, it's very hard to stop it and get back to the issue at hand. So we just hope for next time that it's a lot easier in terms of getting an ad like this out and really getting the right message, especially when things are so important right now and social consciousness and cultural consciousness is really important to have. We'll go to another track now. This is Do What You Want Always by Bored Nothing. You're listening to The Vulture's Nest. We'll be right back.
Sitting around can't be such hell. Counting teeth and fill your skull. Let's go somewhere. There must be something there. Run, make your truly run. Giving up can't be such fun. I've nothing left. Coming off my chest. Let's go somewhere. There must be something wrong.
Venture to Walsh Bay after dark during this year's Sydney Writers' Festival. Catch Teen Vogue editor Elaine Welteroth, Chris Krause, poets Hera Lindsay Bird and Rupi Kaur, and My Dad Wrote a Porno's Jamie Morton. Or join Chris Taylor in the Hemingway Bar for intimate wine-fueled chats with some of the festival's most intriguing guests. 25th to 27th of May at Walsh Bay. Info at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers' Festival, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
Welcome back to The Vulture's Nest on 2SER 107.3. We are in our last few minutes, so we'll just go over the top three news stories of the week. New South Wales are reviewing a mental health patient's death after the final appalling moments of Miriam Merton's life were shown via CCTV camera. Until recently, her daughter believed that she had died in the adult mental health unit of Lismore Base Hospital. However, it has been found that Miss Merrin's final days tell a different story, and that she spent almost 6 hours in a seclusion cell at the hospital. She was naked, had no access to water or to a bathroom. She was then left for 30 minutes covered in her own feces. She is then stumbles around the hallway when she's released the following morning, collapsing in a corner before an emergency crash cart is rushed in by staff. She eventually died due to traumatic and hypoxic brain injury caused by numerous falls and a self-beating of her hand on various surfaces. So the government has now started to pay attention, you could say, to the issues that are happening in health and health facilities across New South Wales. We'll probably have more information on this inquiry as it comes along. However, I think it is expected to find a lot of unsettling facts and really give an insight into this issue. This morning, a global cyber attack has hit international shipper FedEx, disrupting the health system of Britain and infecting computers in 100 countries. The ransomware was a targeted attack which has caused issues in Britain, Spain, Portugal, and Russia. So it believes that people are saying that it has extracted important information, personal information of various people in these countries. I'm sure there will be more on that as it happens, as that happened this morning. And as well, education's biggest new trend, why homes taught kids are doing better than kids at state schools. Obviously, this goes back to the issue of the budget, which we have discussed, and we will continue to discuss in the future as it gets passed, etc., and reactions become more varied to that. However, as with the issue of public health, we are waiting for a reform on public education and making that better. So thank you so much for listening to The Vulture's Nest on 2SCR 107.3. I'm your host, Eden Casita. Next is So Hot Right Now. We have an ad, and then you can listen to the beautiful voice of Sophie. Have a fantastic weekend.
Don't miss your chance to see the final episode of Just Words, recorded live at 107 Projects in Redfern on Thursday, May 18, from 7 p.m. 2SER is really excited to announce that Jeremy Jones from the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council will be joining us on the night as a live guest to debate the merits of 18C. Tickets are selling fast, so don't miss out.